just when you thought it was safe to take down your jack-o'-lantern, the spooky season returns. But not just any spookum, a genre-defining one. Because two horror fans, and the occasional special guest, refuse to let evil die tonight. Welcome to the Apocalypse Video Halloween Retrospective. I am your slightly less creepy narrator, David Snyder. It's time, kiddies. Put on your masks, grab a six-pack and avoid your ex-wife, and be sure to watch out for misfires. It's Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
You don't really know much about Halloween. Halloween, the barriers will be down between the real and the unreal. And the dead might be looking in. The last great one took place 3,000 years ago when the hills ran red.
Halloween, the children.
You happen to know anything about this Cochran?
All I can tell you, mister, is watch out. He's watching you, friend, I guarantee you that.
Hey, Mr. Cochran, just what is the final process?
Fellas, I was just kidding.
Witchcraft. To us, it was a way of controlling our environment.
Hey!
Where are they taking her?
They're taking her to the factory.
I want a mask. Can I have a mask?
Just what I had in mind for you, little buddy.
Why, Cochran? Why? Do I need a reason?
I've got nothing here to indicate there was ever a body at all.
Operator, this is an emergency.
I do love a good joke, and this is the best ever. A joke on the children. I'm glad you'll be able to watch it.
You've got to believe me!
They're going to kill us. All of us.
Stop it!
The world's going to change tonight, Doctor. Happy Halloween.
Stop it!
Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. The night no one comes home.
Welcome to the scariest Halloween of all, Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. I'm your host, Dave. I'm joined again by my favorite drunken doctor, Morton Hoof.
I'm ready to stay at a creepy motel with you.
So Nick, should I just sleep in the car? I mean, it's better on the floor.
That's a dumb question, Dave.
Probably the most inexplicable part of this movie is not the fact that Celtish fanatics steal part of Stonehenge. It's not the fact that laser beams come out of masks and rip people's faces open and bugs come out. No. The fact... that there are like automaton people in this movie dressed in business suits. No. The most inexplicable thing about this movie is the sudden relationship that develops out of nowhere between Tom Atkins, the drunken doctor, the womanizer, and what is her name? Ellie. the character whose father dies in the beginning of the movie and sets everything in motion. Like, this relationship is mind-boggling.
It is. It's just instant.
Yes. Oh, my father died violently. He had his face, like, crushed. Like, so, you want to sleep in my room, or should we get separate rooms, or what are we doing?
I put my cards on the table. That's the only thing that really bugs me about this movie is just they didn't do anything to make these people like hook up. It's well, just, they're you just know horny. What it is?
Actually, they do set this up sort of. it's established multiple times before he meets her, I think. It's established in the first act that clearly Dr. Daniel Chalice is a ladies' man. Like, he...
That's true.
You see him, like, casually kind of, like, slap the ass of one of the nurses at his hospital, and she playfully slaps his ass back. And they have this, like, banter back and forth, like...
Could use a nap.
Doctor's lounge is empty.
Want to take one with me?
Pillows are in the cabinet and there's milk and cookies in the fridge.
I think I should have married you, Agnes.
Watch it, Buster. I play for keeps, you know.
I'm serious.
Oh, yeah, she's, yeah, I play for keeps, and then he's like, I should have married you. And then he has, like, the same sort of rapport with the lady in, like, the morgue.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true. So, I mean, he's more pervy than, like, a ladies' man to me, but.
Yeah, he does come off as more pervy. But
at the same time, like, the girl in the autopsy station, she kind of, like, you can tell she actually likes him.
Yeah. She likes him. Like, yeah, basically it's like all the women in this movie, with the exception of his ex-wife, are like, you could basically boil it down to she's into it.
Yeah.
It's just like, they like his pervy nature, I guess. And it's just like, in the case of Ellie, it just doesn't make sense. Like, he could be the most, like, you know, ladies man there's ever been. Like, I'm sorry, like, your dad was, you just came in from out of town, they say it was a long ride, and you just snuck a peek at your father whose face was crushed, like, the night before. It's like, are you really gonna be in a horny state of mind? I mean, it just doesn't make sense.
Is that, and then correct me if I'm wrong, but is the actress who played his ex-wife, she was in the original Halloween, she was the friend, right?
Yeah, she plays, once again, I can never remember the names of the damn characters in that first Halloween. But yeah, she plays, I want to say, Linda? Yeah, one of her friends. Yeah, she plays the one who gets choked out in the car and then, like, her neck slashed.
Yeah.
You know, like, she gets in the car and it's all fogged up, that famous scene from Halloween. But she shows up and she, basically her role is just like, the naggy ex-wife. Like, you didn't come to pick up the kids. Why aren't you coming to pick up the kids? I don't know what she's got going on.
Yeah, but the thing is,
like,
I mean, this...
He is a terrible father.
He's terrible.
One of my favorite moments from this movie, it's such a tiny moment, but, like, every scene, every interaction he has with his ex-wife is her on the phone, like... You know what I mean? And, like, I love the fact that right before he goes with Ellie to this trip to Santa Mira to investigate the death of her father, he's on the payphone and, like, he's kind of covering it, but you can see there's a six-pack of beer on the other, like, set of payphones that he takes. And it's like, presumably he drank those on the drive over, I'm guessing.
Yeah, first, he's just, it's like right in the shot. So we can see it, and he's, and then the other one, when he basically just says, you know, I need to cancel so I can go fuck this chick.
Basically. And this is not the first time Tom Atkins in a John Carpenter movie has, like, been casually drinking while driving. If we remember in our episode of The Fog, I think our introduction to him in that movie is him drinking and driving. Now, granted, this is the early 80s. People used to do this. This was a thing. Drive without seatbelts, drink and drive, just, you know, casual drinking and driving, just a little light DUI.
A light.
But, but it's still, it's crazy to see nowadays. And I'm curious if, like, if anyone batted an eye at this in 1982.
Well, just to be clear, before we send Tom Atkins to jail, we don't see him actually drink and drive in this movie. I mean, it's just, he just That's grabs true. That six pack. So, I mean, he is a drunk for sure. Like that scene, there's a scene where they're in the town, right? And then he's got like a bottle in a brown paper bag. Yeah. He meets a fellow drunk, and then they just start trading conspiracy theories. And...
If you haven't got a dollar, you can spare it, eh? Hmm. Thank you. All I can tell you, mister, is watch out. You seen the TV cameras yet? He's watching you, friend, I guarantee you that. Hey, Cochran! Fuck you!
Ooh, shh, easy,
it's all right, it's all right. It don't matter to me. He's probably listening. If he is, I got one thing to say. It's the last Halloween for that lousy factory of his. Pretty wild shit going on in there. I heard rumors.
Like what? What'd you hear?
This year, I'm gonna get me about a case and a half of Molotov cocktails. Burn that son of a bitch right now. Last Halloween for them. Last Halloween.
You know, actually, that's kind of one thing that I sort of like about his character, sort of. Like, it seems like no matter which crazy person, like, kind of falls on him in this movie, like, he doesn't react like, get the hell away from me, what the fuck? He's kind of just like, oh, so, hey, buddy, what's up? You know what I mean? Like, he...
Well, that's you get what it... Yeah, that's the reason, one of the reasons I actually like this film quite a bit. I wish Mike was here because I wanted to ask him, because I know he's been reading a lot of those old, like, pulp comics and stuff like that, and to me, this movie feels exactly like one of those stories, like very potently, that this and so, like, these weird or interesting things and characters come into the movie and leave the movie, but it's not so, like, awkward. It's just like it lets the movie kind of I don't know, be wear its own colors and kind of move at its own the pace it wants to move.
Well, he also gets a little information, too, from this drunk guy, this random drunk guy, just, I guess, just allowed to roam around this highly controlled town of Santa Mira with cameras. Oh, I guess we should probably get into the plot of the movie for anyone unaware. Nick, do you want to try to explain the plot of this movie?
Yeah.
It's not a hard plot to explain. It's just a bonkers movie.
Yeah, so I will try to make this a straightforward. A toy company who now makes Halloween masks for children stole a piece of Stonehenge, is going to use the power from that stone to replicate Samhain, which will sacrifice children all over the country with the masks. And Tom Atkins plays a doctor that teams up with a daughter of a man who was murdered by the mask company to try to figure out what happened, or what happened to her dad.
Yeah, he got too close. He figured out that the masks have little microchips that shoot blue laser beams in your face, and that causes bugs to come out of your mouth and you die. It's like, can you imagine if this guy had been more specific when he, like, you know, was carted into the hospital in the beginning of the movie? Like, if he only says, like, they're coming, they're gonna kill us all. Like, imagine if he got into specifics.
Yeah.
Like, they would have carted him off to the psych ward, I think, at that point.
Well, really, okay, so here's a question. I mean, this really doesn't... You shouldn't be asking this question, but I was asking this time around, like, what could have possibly happened where the dad who was killed, where he would have seen anything? Because there, like, he would have had to sneak into, like, the final processing room.
Yeah, it's not really... I don't think it's explained, really. Like, the movie... And I like the way that the movie opens.
Yeah,
like,
very cool.
Well, I guess, like, you know, technically the beginning of the movie, the opening credits is, like, the TV with, like, you know, it's, like slowly building the image of this jack-o'-lantern, which is really cool, and I love the synth score in this movie. It is so good. Like, oh. it's...
The chase scene, yes, where he's, oh, it's so good. It's, yeah, I was like, this is awesome. I need to get this on vinyl. That's what I was saying.
Yeah, this would be a good one to have on vinyl. Like, it just, like, I don't know what it is. Like, every time that little sting would happen, like, beep, you know? Like, that opening is creepy. Like, there's something about just, like, you know, an empty street and a guy running, and then you just see, like, the creepy headlights of a car kind of come around the bend, and it's accompanied by beep. Like, it's creepy.
Yeah, it is. It is creepy, and that score kind of seals the deal, I think.
Yeah, it's like it's not something you wouldn't necessarily, because this is Halloween 3 after all. Like, I guess we should say up front for anyone unaware, Michael Myers is not in this movie.
Well, this not has a character. Nothing to,
not a character. Well, not as a character. Like, technically, he is in the movie as a TV trailer for the movie Halloween, which I wish they hadn't have done. I mean, I guess I understand the logic. It's like, all right, we're calling this movie Halloween 3. We have to tell the, because this is made in 1982, so unless you're reading Starlog magazine or Fangoria, you're probably not hip to the fact that Halloween 3 does not feature Michael Myers. So I guess they had to figure out a way to sort of address this in the movie, but I really don't like it. I don't know. What did you think?
So this is funny. I'm of two minds. I think in the moment, for some reason, if I had seen this movie in the theaters or whatever, I think it would have bothered me. But for some reason, now that I guess because it has such a legacy attached to it, I almost like find it a little endearing. Like they was like, it's like a wink, but
yeah.
And because it stands out, because it's the only one like this of the franchise. So in hindsight, only with decades of time later, I'm like, oh, I kind of like that.
It wouldn't have, you know, it wouldn't have been so bad if this had been Halloween 2.
Yeah.
Well, two things. If this had been Halloween 2 and they clearly established that, like, okay, it's a Halloween sequel, but this is essentially like an anthology thing. You know what I mean? Like American Horror Story. Like every new movie will be a new scary story based around Halloween. That would have been fine. Or they could have just called this movie, and they say this in the documentary on the Blu-ray. If they had just called the movie Season of the Witch, it probably could have alleviated this whole issue that people had. Like, where's Michael? When are they going to get to the Michael Myers factory? You know what I mean?
The Michael Myers factory.
It's like they could have just, you know, they probably could have alleviated that issue. And I bet you this would have been a little more successful.
Yeah, I would agree with you for sure. It doesn't, it's for some reason, it just doesn't, like, I don't know. I like that. And like I said, I think I only think this because so much time has passed and they have millions of other Halloween movies now. But I don't know. I just kind of like that there's this huge outlier that's just something completely different. And it's just so, it's unique. And I dig this movie. I think it's like a.
Same.
I think it's a cult movie, and it feels like something that we're kind of lucky to have, because if they had followed the formula of just another Michael Myers movie, like, we just wouldn't have got this story. And this is such a fun horror film to me.
And in a way, it's, as we mentioned in Halloween 2, like, remember how we said that scene in Halloween 2 where they're in the school and apparently Michael Myers is written in blood, it's Samhain, but Samhain, you know, on the chalkboard. I got to assume that was, like, you know, John Carpenter's way of, like, kind of, you know, a little Easter egg for the next movie to come. So you could argue, and I think people have said this online, like, you could argue that this movie kind of fits in to the Halloween universe as a whole. Like, spoilers for Halloween 6, but it's, you know, maybe this Celtic stuff sort of comes back, kind of, in a way, in future installments.
It is interesting to think. I, you know what? I think another reason I'm more forgiving now is because we have such concerted and calculated efforts in modern movies to have a built-in cinematic universe, and everything has to tie together and everything like that. And this almost feels like a do-it-yourself version of, like, that cinematic universe type of thing. where it's like it's kind of amateur, but it's still an attempt. And it's just like, so it kind of feels like the seeds of that kind of universe building.
Yeah, and you know, I kind of like that that they don't fully explain some things.
Oh yeah, they don't even bother telling us how they actually got the stone. To the Cochran just basically says, "Oh, it was a big ordeal," or something like that.
Those who went before me, you know, they never dreamed of anything like this.
What is this place?
Oh, can't you tell? Advanced. Ancient technology. A good magician never explains. Come on, then. You've still got time to figure it out all by yourself.
Yeah. I could tell you, but I'd have to kill you.
Trade secrets.
Trade secrets. Oh. I love that he has this... Well, he keeps it up for most of the movie. He kind of drops it at the end, but like I love Conal Cochran's demeanor in the movie. It's very much like, I'm the kindly Irishman. You know, I run Silver Shamrock in Santa Mira. I built the whole town. Don't worry. Her face may have been melted off, but she's going to get the best treatment money can buy. You know, yeah. And some of the characters in this movie are so over the top, like the whole family that comes in the Winnebago, the Kupfer family, run by, you know, led by Buddy Kupfer, this like Leave It to Beaver type looking guy. Like, it's just, like, I feel like this movie, I get the sense that this movie, it knows that it's kind of goofy and it's having fun with it. It's leaning into this goofiness.
Oh, I totally believe that. I think that that's one of the reasons I think the movie does succeed is because it knows what it's doing, and it knows the lines that it's walking, and I think it's has a very developed sense of identity in that sense, where it's like it the things that it's not trying to like portray, like be tricky or anything like that, or make something goofy or that's serious or vice versa.
Yeah, and I like that it has a dark sense of humor, too. Like, just, and this is, I'm watching this having seen it a few times in the past, but that scene when the Kupfer family is having the tour of Silver Shamrock, the factory, and they're kind of looking at the masks and everything, and the kid grabs one of the masks, and Cochran goes, "Oh, no, that mask hasn't passed final processing yet," or whatever. "Here, take this one." And the way that Cochran just sort of, like, clumsily puts the mask on the kid's head and just like, you know, rubs, like puts his hand on the top of the kid's head, rubs his hair, like he's just like, having seen this before, that little moment and just the glee that Cochran has, like, "I can't wait to see bugs come out of your dead mouth." You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't say that, but like the way that he just kind of like jerkily puts this mask on this kid's head, like I could see like the evil glee in Cochran's eyes in that moment, and honestly it kind of made me laugh.
Oh, I want a mask. Can I have a mask?
Just what I had in mind for you, little buddy.
I want that one.
Yeah. Oh, no. Look over here. Those masks haven't been through final processing. This one has.
Whoa.
There you are.
Wonderful.
What final process?
Don't ask me.
Yeah, it is a darkly funny.
Sinister.
Yeah, it is. That his character is, I like you had said, the way his kind of character plays out and how he's this, like, you know from the beginning, like, that he's evil or whatever, but this fake evil. It's just, I don't know, it's a very classic villain.
That's one, yeah, like, honestly, that's one of my favorite villain, how do I put this? I love villains like that, that have this veneer of grandpa, like, you know, kindly grandpa-ness to them, like, as, yeah. You know what I mean? like that's always, like, more scary to me when that veneer is lifted, and suddenly it's him going, like, I can't remember. Does he have a line like "I hate children" or something like that?
when he tells Chalice, Atkins' character, his whole plan, he's like, it does sound like he's excited and taking like joy that like all these kids are gonna die.
Why? Do I need a reason? Mr. Kupfer was right, you know. I do love a good joke, and this is the best ever. A joke on the children.
It's a trick on the children. That scene is insane, and it's, and I love it too. He's like, "Well, we'll just put on Halloween. You know, you're going to die soon, but you can at least watch a good movie before you die."
Well, that's another thing about this movie that I, for some reason, I find very charming in this movie is the amount of exposition they give. It's almost like in other movies, I could see myself getting bothered because it would seem lazy, but because it's so wild what they are telling
us.
Maybe it's because we recently watched some Bond movies, but in some ways, like the elaborate like schemes and exposition does remind me of that kind of villainy a little bit in some ways.
Yeah,
just that over the top, right? And it's just kind of like fun to hear someone say all that stuff out loud, and especially him. And when they're, I love like the set design kind of plays into it too, where they are when they're talking about this factory.
Yeah.
But I do love how they organize the TV, like the control center, like in a circle, like Stonehenge too. For some, like just those little details just make it more.
And
fun.
I like that room at the end, it looks like it's taking place in like a black void. Like they're surrounded by like darkness. You know what I mean? It looks like they kind of have like one spotlight illuminating everything like in a circle in the center of the room. And I just love the fact that all of his followers, I guess with the exception of the kindly Irish hotel clerk, they're just like robots. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like no emotion. Some of them are robots. In fact, that makes me wonder, like, I guess we didn't really address this too much, but like Colonel Cochran has a legion of automaton people dressed in business suits that carry out his bidding. And they are essentially robots. One of them played by Dick Warlock, who played Michael Myers in Halloween 2.
Oh, wow.
It's a question I had watching this because I've seen this a few times. Like when they, when Ellie and Chalice, Tom Atkins, arrive in Santa Mira, it's clearly a weird town. There are cameras everywhere. There's a curfew at 6 and everyone locks up. And it got me wondering, like, okay, so the drunk guy that Atkins runs into tells him, "Oh, yeah, and when he came into town, it was nothing. But he brought in all his own people. You think he'd hire me?" So it makes me wonder, like, is the entire population of Santa Mira automatons or what?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I guess you could say they are, but it sounds like the... So one thing, actually, that's unclear. I don't know if you noticed, but the robots, the automatons, as you said, when they die... They spit out this yellow goop, right?
Oh, yeah.
But if you notice, when the scientists, the guys in the lab coats, die after Atkins pours zapping buttons buttons down.
In the wildest climax.
When the guys in the lab coats die, they don't have the yellow goop, so they might actually be humans.
Just followers.
Because they have to do, I could imagine, like, maybe they're assigned with these calculations or I don't know, science magic stuff. So they're humans. So I would believe that they're humans, but that, I think that is something that I wanted to touch on, that a theme I like that this movie does. It doesn't go ham on it or anything, but there's this idea of a big corporation coming in and not benefiting the town in sense and bringing their own people with it. So it's like this quasi form of outsourcing in a sense, where it's more like colonization and of this town by this outsider, basically. And the way that the company's built in the movie is like, it's kind of like a big corporation. Because they talk about the little guys too, with the like the dad shop and the other woman's shop who dies. So I think that's another thing that kind of adds to some of the themes that they're talking about.
Well, and also I noticed on this go around that when Atkins is walking around the town, when it's like 8 o'clock at night or whatever, and he's going to get another bottle of booze in the brown paper bag, I noticed that every single storefront in the town says Shamrock something something.
Oh wow! Yeah, I noticed
it's all Shamrock.
Yeah, there's a couple, like when they first drive through. I know that I saw Shamrock. I think it was like Shamrock Savings or something.
Yeah, there's like a Shamrock Savings. I think there's like a Shamrock like general store or something or other where he gets his beer.
Well, they
I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah, and I think it's just more steps in that world building because when it's another funny exposition thing, but they're Atkins and I'm going to mix up all their names, but Cody's not here to yell at us. So Chalice and Ellie, they are driving and Chalice reads all these facts about the town. Right. And he's like, oh, it's a company town. And so that's the reason why basically everybody works for the same company.
But yeah, and that could be fine. Like there are, I feel like there are towns like that where there's essentially just one big business that everyone works at, like in small towns like that. That, you know, that's fine. I'm fine with that.
So there's one thing I wanted to ask you, what you thought of, and you had mentioned it, the set design of like the lair, basically that they're working in, is like a this darkness around. But one thing I had noticed was that the way the stone is set up, and then they kind of have this control center little like close by. I was wondering if it reminded you at all of what we saw in the setup in Prince of Darkness later on.
Oh, yeah, I can
see
that.
So, like, in Prince of Darkness, they had the big scary tube with Satan inside. and then they have this...
As a side note, that's a movie we need to tackle for some future Shocktober, well, I think.
That's easily one of my favorite Carpenters, so I would talk about that all day. But it just reminded me of... Because I was wondering... Because, you know, I think it seems like Carpenter was definitely involved... in this movie. I don't know you probably know well. So his fingerprints are here.
Oh, definitely he was involved. He co-wrote it. He did the score. He produced it. He kind of spearheaded it, really. Like, he wanted this... I think I mentioned this before. Like, he wanted Halloween 2 to be this. He wanted every new Halloween movie to be a new thing. And in fact, it was kind of interesting, like, a little side note in the trivia. Apparently, the original director attached to this movie was Joe Dante.
Oh, wow.
Of Gremlins fame. And this would have predated Gremlins, too. If he had directed this, this would have come out a year after The Howling, if I'm not mistaken. So he would have been like an up-and-comer. But that said, I don't get me wrong. I would have loved to have seen a Joe Dante version of this movie. I feel like his sensibilities would have fit right along with this weirdness. But to be fair, I think the director, Tommy Lee Wallace, who was also someone who played Michael Myers in the first movie, one of many, I think he does a good job here. Like, it honestly, like, it feels like a John Carpenter movie. Like, if you told me John Carpenter had directed this movie, I'd be like, yeah, makes sense. It feels like a Carpenter movie.
Yeah, his DNA is definitely a part of this movie, and I think that's another reason why I like it so much, is because it's not a, you know... a formulaic replication. It's just a brand new story. It's got those vibes. It's got the synth. And then there's a lot of like actually good direction and cinematography in this movie.
Well, Dean Cundey, man.
Yeah, there's a couple shots in particular that I just really love. Especially there's when Chalice and Ellie they broke out of their Ellie's cell and they're sneaking around the factory. There's these shots where they play with the shadows and like part of their face is shadow and part of their face is lit. It looks really good. And it's just very suspenseful, shots of them sneaking around the factory. And it's just, I really like it. It's just really good.
Well, I like all of the chases in this movie because the
chases are very
great.
Good. That's like I think that's on. If I had to pick one standout thing aside from the gore, which is so cool, the chase scenes are so awesome in this movie.
Well, because it's so darkly lit. Like, I really like the scene when Tom Atkins is being chased by all the people, all the automatons in the town. And by the way, I should probably note, the reason I don't know if they say automaton in the movie, do they?
I don't think so.
I think Cochran mentions like, oh, this is the very first creation that I had. And it looks like an automaton. Like, it reminds me of the thing from Hugo.
Yeah, so that's one thing that they do say is that Cochran was, he originally started with like toys. So one of the first ones that they show, or not that they show in the movie, but that they say he built was like this knitting grandma, which actually that's a great scene.
And it's creepy as hell.
Yeah, it's creepy because, you know, I love the way they put that together because it's clearly a real human, but I don't know that whoever did that got the movements just right.
Definitely. Well, he's also the creator, among other things, whatever this is, a soft chainsaw and sticky toilet paper.
Yes, yeah, you haven't heard of that, man? It's a sticky toilet paper. God, it's everybody a classic. Back in the day. Classic toy. Classic prayer.
Oh, wow, this is it. Hall of Fame time.
What's famous?
You really don't know. Connell Cochran, the all-time genius of the practical joke. He invented sticky toilet paper.
Oh.
Oh, you must know. The dead dwarf gag, the soft chainsaw, all his.
No, gee, I didn't know that.
And before that, he used to make toys. Oh, remember that? When I had one of those when I was a kid, used to sit and watch it for hours.
But anyway, to get back to what I was mentioning about the chase scenes, like, the way it's shot, like, I don't know why, but I don't know if this is necessary, if it feels more realistic to me or not, but, like, every time Tom Atkins is running around and he's just able to sort of, like, crouch down and slip into the darkness for a second and evade, like, a car driving by, for whatever reason, that feels more real to me.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
I'm glad you said that, because that's something that stood out to me on this viewing as well. Is actually the way the person who's being chased hides
how they behave.
Yeah, because the dad in the beginning does that too. If you remember, like he goes to the bungalow and he sees their car, and all he does is crouch down. He doesn't like hide behind something. He just crouches down to make himself less visible. And for some reason, I think you're right. That does make it more believable.
Yeah. Yeah, and just again, like, and again, it's aided by the cinematography. I feel like you get like in that scene you're mentioning with the dad, like he's right outside, like what looks like a trailer or something in like a junkyard, and there's this bright orange light like right outside it, and he sort of crouches down and just sort of, you know, jumps down by the staircase a little bit, like just the cinematography and the way people behave in this movie. I just like, and during the chases specifically, just it feels real and it feels visceral to me.
Yeah, I like them too. They're really exciting. And they, you know, another thing that I think we've seen, like the one I'm thinking of is in Maniac Cop 2, there's just an extended scene that in the beginning was exciting, but it just keeps going. These are like the pacing and time spent are all, you know, pretty good. You don't get bored of it or anything like that. So, yeah, I think the chase scenes are cool. And then there's a lot of cool, like just, I don't know if I would call them plot twists, but just story beats that are really cool. Like when Ellie becomes a robot for some reason. An automaton.
They turn... Well, again, I say that because I feel
like... It's actually not clear if it's the same... If like they didn't turn her there or they just made a replica. They never actually say.
Which is pretty damn fast. I gotta hand it to them. they can process their automatons pretty damn quickly.
Yeah,
I
guess know, everybody's talking about Irish efficiency.
But it is such a cool, like, that is one of many, if you're watching this for the first time, cool, dramatic, I don't want to call them twists, but just revelations that happen in this movie where you're like, what? Like, I remember there were several times I can recall when I first saw this where I just literally, like, sank back, like, thrust back in my chair and went like, what the hell? Like in the beginning, for instance, like when... Ellie's dad runs, you know, he manages to get to the hospital. He gets taken to the hospital by this guy. He runs into at a gas station and he thinks he's safe. And then one of the automatons comes in, crushes his face and then calmly just walks out, which makes it creepy that he's just calmly walking, by the way. And it's a different, I guess it's a similar vibe to Michael Myers, but just the fact that it's this guy in like a business suit. Just calmly walking out, and you hear the click of his shoes as he walks out. It just makes it creepier. And then the moment when he just gets in his car, calm as it can be, and just douses himself with gasoline and then lights it and it blows up. Like, I remember the first time I saw this moment, forgive the pun, blown away. I was like, what? I'm like, once that happened, I'm like, I have no idea what's going to happen next in this movie. Like, Carpenter, you got me. I'm in.
That's another thing that this movie does so well. I mean, this movie, this movie's damn good.
It's awesome.
But I think you're right on. This movie has done a very good job at mastering that kind of, how would I call it? Like oscillations of intensity. Like, so that I think you're, if you imagine like a pulse monitor in like the hospital or whatever, like it so the suit guy, he kills the guy, you know, you go up, and then like you said, the way that they shoot him leaving, like your pulse goes down because it's all of a sudden so flat and everything like that, and then it throws you off again when he lights himself on fire. But I think the movie does that the entire runtime. Like it's the stuff that is dramatic is so like over the top, like turning a kid's face into a skull, God, or a flattened skull with bugs and spiders coming out,
and a snake at one point.
Oh man, when the rattlesnake comes out,
woo!
That is so cool because the rattlesnake is so much bigger than the, I don't know, it's just
The fact that it looks like they just dumped a bunch of various types of bugs on this actor's body, just,
man, when for some reason, like when all the crickets come out, and then there's there's a shot later of the mom's just, it's just her feet, and then the crickets are sprawled out, like it's they're not covering the floor, but they're all over basically. It's so many good like creepy shots, like I love
it. It's disgusting too, like, yeah, just like it's super like that gross. Was oh, it's so gross. And just the way that like the kid, like when the TV is on and it's activating the chip in the mask that's turning his brain to, or turning his face, caving it in, like the way that the kid grabs the mask and just starts you know what I mean? It just looks like the way the mask is built, like it just, it looks like it's like caving in, and
yeah,
and it's all real time, and it's just, it's so gross. And especially the scene when with the misfire, where one of the other people like coming into town to talk about an order she had that got messed up, Marge, she notices the little trademark has fallen off, and there's like a microchip on the back. She's like, "What's this?" And weirdly, her first reaction is to pick at it with a paperclip. I probably wouldn't do that, but but just the moment when it shoots the laser in her face, and her face just like, because we don't see this with the kid, we only see this with Marge. Like her face just like, it looks like her mouth gets like blown open, weirdly, like, you know, like, yeah, expanded
her mouth jaw area, like blooms. Ugh. Like a flower.
Yes. Oh, and it's so,
and then a bug crawls out.
Yes, and it's so gross
for good measure.
Well, and what makes it even more I mean, obviously you could tell this is like a, you know, like a puppet head type of thing, but what's really sells this moment is that you hear her going you know what I mean, like, and then it cuts to her like feet, like, you know, like, you know, going back and forth, and they really sell it. And again, just
so an implication to this scene, this is my fan theory, is this is actually what happens to the kids inside the mask.
Well, yeah. So, we just don't see it later with the kid because he's got the mask on. But
that's fucked up, man.
It's, yeah, it is. But again, it's like, and we've said this before, you can't beat practical effects. Like, even though clearly it's a puppet Marge head in this moment, like, again, the sound effects, the cut to her feet, like, going back up and down in the bed. Like, I don't know, like, I'll have to put this in. But just the sound that she makes, like, just the idea that she's still alive to some degree in this state is so disturbing.
It's funny, you know, you and I have been friends for quite some time now. When we first started, like, first became friends, I loved the 80s so, so much. And watching this movie now, as I watch a lot less of the 80s stuff, it rekindles that love because it's so good. Like that, you know, that practical effects that just, it has some kind of charm about it. And, you know, we don't really can't get that anymore. And it's just,
well, it's tangible.
Yeah. It adds a level of like pseudo realism to it, just I don't know, because you see it and you know, I don't know, it's just so cool, like really good. I love the gore in this, like the bug factors are so creepy. It's just, and then I don't know, it's just over the top in all the right ways.
Well, especially when the drunk guy, the random drunk guy in the town, gets his head literally ripped off.
Oh, yeah.
And a geyser of blood follows.
Yeah.
And I got to hand it to him. Like, you know, this is the early 80s. This came out at the peak of the slasher film, the peak of, you know, over-the-top gore. We're talking, like, you know, scenes from, like, Maniac with, like, the shotgun head explosion and scanners, the head explosion, stuff like that. And I think they do a really good job, because I got to imagine that the MPAA was probably all over them. Like, you can only show, like, a split second of the geyser, the blood geyser. You know what I mean? But, like, they do a really good job of showing just enough of the gore. You know what I mean? Like, I never feel like it's just right. I never feel like it's too excessive or not enough. You know what I mean? It's just the right amount of gore for me.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that's a reason this movie is on the other side of legitimacy, or the right side of legitimacy.
The other side of legitimacy, yeah. The Halloween 3 story.
it doesn't, like, you know, I don't know, revel in its,
yeah,
it does. It has the perfect dosage. I think that's what I would say.
Yeah, for sure. And honestly, like, you know, I'm sure, you know, they have to keep the mask on the kid, because you can't show, you know, a prolonged shot of a kid's face caving in and bugs coming out of his mouth. You got to leave the mask on for that. But again, that the fact that they do it, that they kill that little crappy, stupid weeder kid. He's credited, by the way, as Little Buddy. and he is a shit. This kid is a shitty shit. Like his like his introduction is like when the family comes in, like his bike falls off the Winnebago and he jumps on it. The mom's like, "Don't you ride in the street?" And he flips off the mom. Yeah. and he rides in the street anyway. I'm like, this kid needs to die.
He got his comeuppance.
Oh yeah, he did.
But that is a thing about this movie that I do like. It's like, you know, it also reminds me a lot of the Power Rangers, the Japanese ones that we watched, in terms of this plot to basically kill kids. And that's just something that you don't see a lot, and it could be done really poorly, obviously. But this one is more of like, it's something very ominous, especially, you know, I think you and I both love, like, when after the factory has been exploded and he's just running, trying to stop the commercials and stuff like that, like the implication, and he's right next to kids that are about to potentially die.
Yes.
He's watching them. Like, that's a whole level of gravity that, I don't know, it's very potent.
Well, it's what's funny about this. So the plot of Conal Cochrane is they sent out all these masks. They've inundated everyone, radio, television, you name it, with this freaking annoying thing of do 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 do, you know, 2 more days to Halloween, and it's the most annoying earworm ever. So all the kids are, and I to speak to that earworm, I love that moment, like in the beginning when Atkins, like, goes to his ex-wife's house, he gives the kids, like, some masks, and they're like, "We already got the mask, it's the big giveaway, Dad," and they turn on the TV and it's that thing, and I love it because the mom's like, "Would you turn that down?" And there's a shot of the kid, like, turning back around to look at his mom. He's got the skull mask on. And it's almost just like, the kid doesn't say anything, but it's a moment where the kid's just like, "But it's this giveaway, Mom." You know what I mean? Like, what the hell are you talking about, Mom? It's the giveaway.
2 more days to Halloween. I don't believe this commercial never stops.
The whole plan of Cochrane is, we've sent out all these masks. We know the little wiener kids are going to watch the thing, the giveaway, and all these kids are going to blow up. But here's the thing, though. Like, it's not – he's never specific as to, like, we've sent these out to the whole world. Like, presumably it's just, like, mostly the United States. So I guess his idea is, like – he's hoping to reach a certain number of kid deaths, I guess, to appease, like, you know, Samhain or whatever. Like, it's just funny to me that, like, his whole idea is like, we gotta kill at least this number of kids for a good sacrifice, you know?
Well, that's a funny
thing. I like that it's not super specific.
Yeah, it's not. He doesn't say, like, what number of kids he needs to kill. It's just basically, he's just,
you gotta kill a lot of them.
He's just being evil. Like, he doesn't even have ambitions to, like, take over the country or something like this is not a world takeover plot. It's just, I'm gonna kill kids.
Yeah, exactly. So like, from his perspective, he's like, well, even if Tom Atkins manages to turn off, like, a couple of the stations, we still killed at least a few fids, you know?
Think about this, though. This is another thing about this movie that it's like, so he, if we, because they do a montage, right, where they show different,
which is great,
which different places in the country. So they have different cities. So we know that these stations are not the same. So actually at the end, when Tom Atkins is calling, he's just canceling the stations in his town, right?
Exactly.
So the other, the rest of the country is dead.
Well, the kids.
But another
who are allowed to stay up till 9, I guess.
Another thing that I think we can assume they did throughout the country, they have vans running through the streets saying,
oh, yeah,
go home, watch the special.
Yes.
All those lucky kids with silver shamrock masks, hurry home for the big giveaway. It's almost time. Hurry home.
Oh, it's
worldwide.
Because you're absolutely right. Like, when he's on the phone, like, it's not like he called, like, the president of, like, ABC or NBC, CBS. You know what I mean? No, he's probably conceivably talking to local TV channels.
Yeah, so, I mean, the rest of the country is doomed. I think they're in Northern California, right? Is that what they say? So that's safe.
But, well, except for that one channel, because like the one channel at the end doesn't turn off, so not even the kids in his area are safe.
That's true. Well, we don't know. That's I think that's this movie's ending is on par with like Invasion of the Body Snatchers in terms of just like the unclear hopelessness.
And I gotta give it to him, like even if it was a local thing, that means that giveaway was broadcast on. It's crazy to me that it was broadcast on multiple stations. Ordinarily, you would think like, no, it'll be on the one station, turn into this station. But no, like that van's driving around, like, it doesn't matter, kids. Tune into any station. We're on all of them.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's the implications of that are so insane. And to me, I think this has one of my favorite endings to. I think I've said this before. I love bleak endings with horror movies. I love the ending that, like you mentioned, Body Snatchers. The Thing is one of my favorite endings to a movie ever. And this one is so good. It's just him like, stop it. No, stop it. Stop it. And then he looks like the last second before it cuts to black, he looks directly into the camera and it's like, stop it.
Yeah.
It's so good. I love it.
It's time. It's time.
We are experiencing technical difficulties. Please stand by.
Dark masks, gather round your TV set. Put on your masks and watch. All witches, all skeletons, all jack-o'-lanterns.
The third commercial, it's still on, please. Take off the third channel. The third channel is still running. Stop it, please. For God's sake, please stop it. There's no more time. You've got to... Please, stop it. Stop it now. Turn it off. Turn it off. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it.
That ending seals the deal for the movie for me. It's just
absolutely.
Like there's this, it's like a perfect ending. You couldn't write it better. And then Atkins' performance on the phone, especially, is just no matter what sins he committed earlier in the movie.
No matter how many people he sexually harassed. No matter how many people he may have inadvertently killed, like sideswiped on the road while he was drinking and driving.
How many DUIs he avoided? he's redeemed because it gives this amazing performance at the end.
It's incredible. I you know, honestly, to speak to Tom Atkins, maybe we talked about this on the Fog episode we did a few years ago, but he has like a certain quality that. Like you would think, so everything we just said about his character, you would think this is like the most unlikable character ever, but no, he is actually very likable somehow. I don't know what it is. Tom Atkins just has a certain unidentifiable quality to him in this era of movie. He starred in a lot of movies like this. Like another movie that we should really talk about in the future, Night of the Creeps. He brings that same energy to that character in that movie. And I don't know. Tom Atkins to me is like one of those great B-movie horror icons of the 80s that I love to see him. When he pops up, it's always like it's always pleasant seeing him pop up in a movie.
Yeah, he has a certain energy and demeanor. It's almost like in this Halloween 3 especially, he is a shitty character, but at the same time, he's not. It doesn't feel like he's actively shitty, if that makes sense. It's just like, oh, well, I'm just a shitty dude. Like, it's just like part of
it. Well, it gets back to what I mentioned before. Like, when he runs into that drunk guy in the town, like you would think his first reaction would be like to shove him. Like, what the hell? Get away from me. But it's like, no, hey buddy, what's up? You know what I mean? Like he doesn't come off as standoffish in that moment. And I think that kind of speaks to his character a little bit, that he's more just like, I guess it kind of makes sense. He's a doctor, so ideally you would hope that like he doesn't, like his first reaction wouldn't be to shove the guy. It'd be like, oh, hey, dude, are you all right? You know what I mean?
That's true. And you know what? It does actually, like, there's something to be said about making him a doctor in the movie, because it plays out well when not their neighbor at the motel dies, the woman.
Dude, I'm a doctor.
Yeah,
let me
look at her. Yeah. And then he has like a legitimate question, like, or it makes sense, like, why he would ask, you know, where are you taking her, a lot of stuff, because
we're taking her to the toy factory, the hospital wing of the toy factory.
Where are you taking this person who had their face blown off? To the factory, of course.
Well, to be fair, when they wheel her out, she's covered. They don't know. So they don't know exactly what happened. Yeah. And then Cochran later, it's like, oh, by the way, which we helicoptered her to a facility in San Francisco. You know, which is like, oh, I guess that sounds official. Ooh, they flew her somewhere. Like, it's just sad.
So I will say, though, there is at least one moment/kind of scene that just stands out to me as pretty goofy.
Only one, huh?
Well, like that kind of... bugs me if anything, or where it makes me roll my eyes when at one point in the movie they do capture Tom Atkins' character, and he's kind of,
I think I know what you're about
so
to
they
say.
they put him in this room with a mask,
with a camera
on him. With a camera and a TV, so his head's gonna blow up and everything like that, but he manages to. And this part, okay, I'll buy it. You know, he kicks in this TV. He gets a shard. He cuts himself loose. Or before he cuts himself loose, he takes off his mask. And there is just no way this is possible. But he's, like, tied up, has a mask in his hand. He tosses the mask to the ceiling and gets it.
Yeah, because the TV is mounted, right?
No,
it's camera that he's throwing the mask on. Right.
Yeah, it's the camera. But the camera's in the corner of the ceiling, right? The room. And he's
on the floor.
He's in the chair. His hands are tied up. It's just no way. It's just the way it lands. I don't know. It's just too...
Well, because it's not like he gets to use his arm at all. It's literally a flick of his wrist.
Yeah, he's got some strong wrist strength.
Well, supposedly, I don't know. This is the Chattopedia, or the ChatDB, so take this with a grain of salt. But apparently it took, like, they actually did do that. And it took, like, 40-something takes to get. And I guess the reason they did it was evidently, again, this is the ChatDB, the director was able to do it in one go. So I guess they just assumed, oh, well, this wouldn't take long to get. I did it in one go. Come on.
Oh, no, that sounds some like an apologist hijacked ChatDP and... put this fake
this bogus trivia point in there
to justify it.
Yeah, honestly, I don't mind it because it's so goofy. Like, honestly, when I saw it, I laughed. Like, that like this mask perfectly, because you would think realistically it would just hit the camera and fall to the ground, you know? He's got to get it perfectly so that the part where you stick your head in, like, perfectly goes over the camera. It's insane, but because it's so insane, I actually kind of like it. It goes around and it's funny to me.
I don't know. I just like when he throws it up and it lands perfectly, at least the way I was kind of orienting the room is just like, there's no way. Like, okay, just trying to get him free. I don't know. So that's like my one like goofy moment that's like, oh gosh, it's lazy.
Well, yeah. So to get back to moments, like we mentioned before, like I remember seeing this the first time, and when the guy lights himself on fire, it boggled my mind. But then later, I mean, and there's several things like Marge's face getting blown apart, the kid, the bugs coming out of him. But a big one is, like you mentioned before, Ellie being turned into an automaton, or Ellie is killed and they just make an automaton. It's not really clear. But I love it because this is after Tom Atkins and her get into a car. They've managed to kill Cochran. They've blown up the factory. So it's on fire. And I love that shot of them running away in the fire and the factory in the background. It's so cool. And just like they're in the car And then Ellie just grabs him unexpectedly and turns out she's a robot. And I love it because it reminds me of They Live. They get into a car crash. He gets out of the car. You think Ellie's dead. And she comes back again and tries to kill him. He subdues her. And again, it reminds me of They Live because if you remember in that fight scene, it just keeps going on. The fight scene between Roddy Piper and Keith David. Like, it's uninterrupted for 5 minutes. You think it's going to end. It keeps going. And it's the same thing here. Because after he gets into a car crash, I think he manages to, like her arm comes off in the car crash and he takes care of her body and you think it's over and he's sort of just walking. You're like, oh man, I can't believe it. He's out of breath, but he's still got to turn the TV channels off. But no, that's not it, because like her fucking body, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not, or it's like her arm.
Her arm comes back.
Like, her arm comes back and tries to kill him. He's like, that.
Yeah.
It just doesn't. I love it because the movie.
You know why that arm attack works though for me? It's because instead of having an acting thing with Tom Atkins with a prosthetic arm, for the most part, the shots and scenes of him getting choked out is actually like a real hand.
That's like a real hand.
Yeah, exactly. Real hand. I hope that it was Ellie's actress's hand. That would be cool. But the camera's framed or whatever, so you don't see it. But it just it's so much more real. That's cool.
It's absurd. Yeah. The whole scene is absurd because you think it's over with, and it's just like, ugh, can't believe it. That was so crazy. It's just like, and it keeps going it's almost like one of those things where it's like a joke that like it plays out and it's like, it's not funny, stop it, you keep going, but then it goes on long enough to where it comes back around and it's funny again.
Oh, isn't that like the Family Guy formula?
I guess but in this moment I like it because it doesn't go long enough to be annoying.
I don't think it doesn't to me. Okay, so to me it doesn't feel as long as like They Live.
Fine. Well, I guess it's just because like, you know, it's like how many more like jump scare moments can you have?
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And I think they have just enough where it's just funny because you're like, they have so many. You think it's over? Then boom, another one. Okay, now it's got to be over. No, here's another one. You know, it's just,
we're not done yet.
We're not done yet. It's the rule of threes. It's the jump scare law of threes. But yeah, I mean, I think that's about it. I don't have too much else. I think we covered most of the stuff I had in my notes. Did you have anything else?
No, I think we actually been talking quite a bit about this. I think we hit everything mostly.
There was one last thing I wanted to note. Like, we mentioned the exposition in this movie and that it's, and how it can be super wild at times because what they're talking about is so insane. But I like the way that the timeline of this movie, I like how it progresses time in this movie. I like that it starts on Saturday the 23rd. And I, in a sort of realistic way, I like that, like how events unfold. It shows you like the time, like, you know, the day and all that, because like it's almost more realistic in a way because it's like, you know, I like that a few days pass that we don't see, where it's just like it allows time enough for her, like Ellie, for example, to have like a funeral for her dad. It allows time for like the coroner to do like an investigation. Like, it's not immediate. You know what I mean? I kind of like how time progresses in this movie.
However, I do agree with you, but there is one, I think I'll call it a day, where it's like, I don't know what they were going for, but do you remember when, I think they came, Chalice and Ellie came back from the factory and they're just hanging out in the motel and it's like, oh, I think they were saying like, let's go home or something like that. And then first,
oh, we'll call the cops,
something like that. But Chalice is like, oh, what's the hurry? And then all of a sudden, Chalice sits in a chair and Ellie lays on the bed. And then presumably hours pass and they're both like just napping or something like that. And it's just like the movie, I guess, is just saying they've just been trying to think of what to do. And it's just,
yeah, like, that's a little weird.
It's funny because it's like there's no sense of urgency. I guess they were just thinking, what should we do? And they just fell asleep.
Well, and this is after their tour of the factory where she confirms that, like, that's my dad's station wagon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So right? I think I can't remember when exactly this happens, but it's very blatant to me that they're just being lazy. they're not even like having sex or anything, like a time passer or whatever.
You would think, like, as soon as they confirmed, like, that was my dad's station wagon, you are zooming to the next town to get the authorities.
Yeah, something like that. So
that is definitely my dad's car. Those guys are preventing me from looking at it. Like, there is foul play. You need to look at this. Like, to me, that's probable cause for a cop.
Yeah, I don't know. We could be wrong about the timing. Like, this could have even happened before. But nonetheless, I do explicitly remember this moment where the camera, you know, I don't know what that technique would be called, but where the camera, like, basically suggests that time has passed. And they're in the same room, though. And Chalice is napping in his chair and she's napping on the bed. It's just like, well, what have they been doing? Nothing.
Oh, no. Okay. Yeah. No, because that shot you just said. Okay. So that actually happens. The scene you're describing happens after Marge is carted off.
Yeah. Like early on. But they're still like, oh, well, what? Nothing. They're not doing anything.
Well, it happens after Marge is cut off, but before they take the tour of the factory.
Yeah. Okay, that makes
sense. So it's basically, yeah, okay.
But
so
they didn't know that they were going to do a tour. They were just
no,
chilling.
but it's just, it's basically just like, you know, that thing happened in the middle of the night where, like, the ambulance came and carted her away. And it almost looks like the way it suggests that, because he sits in a chair, that it's almost as like Tom Atkins, for some reason, felt the need to, like, stay awake during the night or something.
I don't know.
And, like, they're all in their clothes too, so it's almost like they were ready to leave if they needed to. But yeah, it's kind of weird.
It's just this. It just, to me, all that they were saying is like, well, they're not in a hurry. They're just they're just chilling. That's it.
Yeah, that part's a little goofy, but that little thing aside, I love this movie.
I do too.
Like, honestly, like, I think the first time I saw it, I kind of looked at it like a cheesy, fun B movie, and it is that. But honestly, I really don't think you can ignore some of the craft in this movie. Like, I think the cinematography is excellent. I like the way people react in this movie. Like, again, like, Tom Atkins just has this weird presence about him. Like, he feels like kind of a real guy to me a little bit, like, or at least he looks like a real guy. Like, he doesn't scream Hollywood, you know what I mean? Like, he kind of just seems like a dude, and I kind of like that.
I do too. I mean, and honestly, for me, Halloween 3 among kind of 80s B-movies, B-horror movies, this is among the best, in my opinion. Like, a top ranking of those kinds of movies.
It's fun as hell.
Even looking at Tom Atkins, you know, filmography, you know, it's a couple of these. Like, I like Halloween 3 more than Night of the Creeps, and definitely more than Maniac Cop. So, I don't know. I just, I think it's a blast. It's really fun. It goes by real fast. Like, it's a very breezy runtime, and the story, there's nothing, like, aside from that one 30-second clip of them being lazy in the room, like, the movie's constantly moving. So I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
It's like not boring at all. Never a pain to watch or anything like that. I love it.
I'm basically always down to watch this movie. This is maybe like the fourth or fifth time I've seen it. And also, by the way, I should point out the 4K for this movie, excellent. I like that I appreciate the Shout Factory includes, like, the original mono soundtrack, which is what I watched this in. Did include an Atmos, but I'm like, no, I want it all front and center. I want it just coming at me, you know, front and center. But yeah, definitely, if you haven't seen this movie, definitely recommend checking it out. I'm sorry we spoiled so many cool moments, but but at the same time, if you're listening to this and you haven't watched the movie, it's like, that's on you, buddy.
If you haven't seen this movie, I would guess there's only one reason the primary reason most people probably haven't seen this is if they knew that Michael Myers wasn't in it and, like, oh, I don't want to bother with it. But if that's true, just accept that fact or roll with it and just dive into it as, like, you know, a creepy story, and I think you have a good time.
Absolutely. Definitely recommend it. In fact, if I recall, I think the first time I saw this movie was the result of a blind buy. When Scream Factory first released this on Blu-ray, I bought it without having seen it, And I freaking loved it, man. I love it when I can blind buy a movie and it ends up turning out to be like a gem. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like a diamond in the rough. And it's I can't recommend this movie enough. I think you're right. I think it, I honestly think it stands among like the sort of like cult 80s horror movies of that decade. Like it's just, it's so much fun. The gore is cool. It's not excessive. So honestly, like, well,
that's one thing. This movie, so I think an example I would point to that this movie is trying to be mindful of its balance of gore. The autopsy girl, she dies by getting a drill put through her head, but they actually show it.
That's right.
They just imply it. And that's actually a pretty creepy shot because the way – I love that shot actually. When the man is the automaton who killed her gets up, the camera is angled in a way where there's like a table slash desk or something like that. And the top of it is blocking her upper half. And so you just see her feet, but you know she's laying there and she's been murdered by a drill. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Recommendations all around. Definitely, give it a blind buy, honestly. You won't be, I don't think you'll be disappointed, especially if you're a fan of 80s horror. I think you'll really get a kick out of this movie. Leave your preconceptions at the door of what the Halloween franchise needs to be. Like, honestly, in my opinion, this is one of the best Halloween movies. I'm going to say it.
Do you like this one more than two?
Yes.
I do too. Yeah, I do too.
And speaking of Halloween 2, we should mention that the hospital in this particular movie feels more like a real hospital than the one in Halloween 2. Like it was just a thought I had because like the hallways are brightly lit. It feels more like a hospital that
Halloween 2 would have been worse. I think.
I'm just saying this to be an asshole and to sort of like cinema sins it, I suppose. But I'm just saying like the hospital in this movie, it's a stark contrast because this, minimally staffed hospital at night feels more real because it's brightly lit. There's a scene like when he runs out into the lobby, there's people in the lobby. You know what I mean? It's minimally staffed, but like it's still staffed, and the nurses are like tending to the patients. Like and again, it's like presumably there are patients in these rooms. So I'm not saying like Halloween 2 should have had a realistic hospital. I think that's like ironically what makes that movie fun is that the hospital is essentially like the Overlook Hotel, like you mentioned. That's what makes that hospital creepy. But again, I just wanted to point that out because again, this follows Halloween 2. It was only a year later.
I would bet money on another day at Halloween 3's hospital. Tom Atkins is with a nurse in a hot tub at the bottom of the hospital. Yes. Fooling around.
No, I'm not saying that type of thing wouldn't happen. I'm just saying like it was a stark contrast, like the way this hospital was run and depicted as versus the one in Halloween 2. It just came to mind. I couldn't help but think about it because we really talked about that a lot in the Halloween 2 episode. So It was on my mind.
Well, yeah, but I don't know. I think you're right.
I'll just say this. I would rather stay at Tom Atkins Hospital than the hospital in Haddonfield. I feel like I would get better care from the drunken doctor in this hospital the drunken doctor in the Haddonfield Hospital.
What does his ex-wife say when he walks in the beginning? He's like, oh, drinking and doctoring, oh, what a pair or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Anyway. If we're giving rankings at this point, it's Halloween 1, Halloween 3, and Halloween 2 for me so far. I don't know about you.
I agree with you.
Yeah. But this is like, this gets a special star. You know what I mean? Because it's so out there and it's trying something different. It's not a carbon copy, and I really appreciate it for that. So
yeah, it's together but separate. For the whole franchise. I mean, I think we've said this on our first Halloween episode, but this is the last Halloween movie I have seen.
Going into uncharted territory.
Yeah, everything after this I have not seen ever.
Oh my God, I can't wait. Well, next time, folks, we will be witnessing the return of Michael Myers when we come back. Oof. Go ahead, Elf. Yes. When we return, we will be watching Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers. The night he comes home again. We forgot to mention that. The tagline for this movie is awesome. It's the night no one comes home. I like that.
In a mask, no one can use one.
Yes! I love it.
And happy Halloween.